This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody, on this sunny Saturday. Looking like it's going to be I thought it was supposed to rain, which is great to see it's not. So hope everybody's going to enjoy the day. We got 3 great hours here to catch up on everything going on in both the National Football League, baseball, NBA, NHL, you name it. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, the Mariners bounced back with a nice victory over Texas last night, 9-2. Felix Hernandez pitched into the 6th inning, did a pretty good job, and of course, you know, it was 2-2, and then all of a sudden things started to open up for the offense, which has been stalled all week, mostly by the Houston Astros, so they were able to start getting some positive things going in that direction, and so now the Mariners will continue tonight. It's going to be James Paxton on the mound going against Bartolo Colon. 5-10 is going to be the start of the game. Mike Zunino called up off the 10-day disabled list. Mike Marjama goes down. In the NBA, Pacers beat the Cavaliers 92-90. Cavs blow a 17-point lead as the Pacers come back. And so all of a sudden, the Pacers lead that series 2-1. Are the Cavs in trouble? I don't know. I'm starting to think so. LeBron did great, but nobody else in the rest of the team did well, and they really faded down the stretch. No update on Earl Thomas other than what we heard on Thursday is that the Seahawks at least John Snyder's been informed by the representatives, no Earl Thomas holdout into the season. Still, there's a possibility of a trade, but the trade probably starts to slip a little bit. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing on a fine Saturday, not raining Saturday morning?
I know. Very nice. Nice to see no rain.
I'll take that, sir. Hey, next week is big time. Next week, good.
Yep.
Can we get a top 10 right quick?
Top 10. Where things are going to go? Well, I mean, my way of thinking is going to be Sam Darnold number 1, then okay. Number 2, I think it's going to be Daquan Barkley. Then 3, I think that'll end up being the Jets taking Baker Mayfield. Number 4. That probably goes Bradley Chubb going to Cleveland if they keep the pick. Number 5, I think Josh Allen. Then, number 6, probably I think Buffalo ends up trading up and they take Josh Rosen. Number 7, I think that could end up, Nelson, I think, is probably going to go number 8 or so. So I think number 7 could be the Alabama cornerback. Then we start getting into San Francisco. What was he? At number 9, I think they take Edmonds, the linebacker. So that's kind of a start on what I'm thinking of right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. And you take a quick look at the Giants.
Right.
Now, the Giants have been entertaining those quarterbacks. Would they make a move to take a quarterback right there?
I don't think so. No, I really don't. I think that's not their plan. I think that they want to go position. I think they still believe that Eli Manning has some time left, and I don't think they want to disturb that time. So, no, I don't think that they'll do that.
Could you see Buffalo possibly trying to get in their top 5 for a quarterback?
I can see them trying. I just don't know if they can succeed because, yeah, and that maybe there's a chance because, see, what I have Josh Allen going to Denver. What I'm also doing is taking the tack that it's not that they're automatically taking a quarterback because I think the only quarterback they'd like would be – their quarterbacks they'd like would be Darnold and Allen. I don't think they're going to be on the Mayfield bandwagon, and I don't think they're going to be on the Josh Rosen bandwagon.
I think if the Jets stay where they're at, which they're going to stay where they're at, they moved up to get in that third spot right there.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the Jets taking Baker Mayfield right there. Now, I could see the Giants taking Barkley. Now, we defer different on the first pick. I think Josh Allen is going to be the first quarterback off the board, Mr. Clayton.
I don't.
You don't think
why
so?
Why do you 57% completion and, really not able to play in the first year?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. You look at Sam Darnold. Didn't he have like 4 or 5 games where he didn't even throw a touchdown pass?
He was 20-4. It's a better record than Josh Allen. He's more accomplished on a bigger level than Josh Allen. And he's 20 years old. He's young.
Yeah, he's still young. There's some things I think he's kind of sporadic sometimes as far as his thinking on the field. As far as that's concerned, he throws some interceptions that were kind of ill-advised. I didn't like the way he did that. So, it's just, I think Josh Allen has got a bigger arm than he does. And I think Josh Allen comes from a situation where he's a little more athletic than Sam Darnold. And I just got that feeling. You know, it's kind of like the Carson Wentz situation. You know, it was
right.
Carson Wentz or the kid from over there with the Rams. You know, you pick your poison. And that turned out pretty good for both of them. But Carson Wentz turned out to be a decent quarterback. I think Josh Allen might be in that same.
Carson Wentz had a higher completion percentage than Allen.
Yes, he did. Yeah, you're right about that. I can't argue with you on that one. I just we'll defer different on that.
Yeah.
Not the Chubb kid. Not Chubb. Do you see him going to Denver since they found out? I don't think they're going to pick up Shane Ray's contract. Right.
I can see that being an option, sure. No doubt. Because, I mean, the way I think it goes, it's like you got Barkley, Chubb, and Nelson, and they're three unique guys at three unique positions. And normally you wouldn't want to take a running back in the top five, but he's that unique. You wouldn't want to take a guard in the top 10, but I think he's that unique. And so with that unique qualities, I think that probably puts them in a pretty good spot to go there. But, you know, for position players, I mean, they're as good as any that's come out in the last several years in those particular positions.
Now, could you see Barkley? Could you see Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame? Could you see him going to the Colts?
I could see that, yeah. Because again, I think he's that good. I think that they're a team that really does want to trade, and so there's a better likelihood of a trade there because that's where I think that Buffalo can move successfully and get something.
Yeah, because you look at the Buffalo Bills right now, not Buffalo, the Colts right now. They need help on that offensive line. I mean,
they need help everywhere.
Definitely, they do. But when you start with the offensive line, you know, to me, my philosophy still starts on the offensive and defensive line. If you can't win the line of scrimmage, you can't win a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the coach, one of their biggest problems that Andrew Luck had was his ability to have good coverage in front of him, good blocking, good, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think he might end up right there. Now, you were talking about Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, they could use a cornerback right there.
Right. And that's why, I mean, it's funny because people have the Alabama defensive back as being a safety. He's a cornerback, at least in this league.
You know, caution to the wind sometimes, you know. What you see in college is not necessarily the same play you're going to get it when you get to the pros, you know, if you look at it. Now, Micah Fitzpatrick, he is a cornerback. But I've seen some times where he can have a propensity to gamble and receivers can get behind him, get up top of him. And it just, you know, the SEC didn't really have good quarterback play this year in the SEC. You know, they had a couple of freshman quarterbacks that were pretty good. They might be better showing this year than they were last year. So just a little caution to the wind on that one as far as it. Do you like him as the best cornerback in the draft?
I do, yeah. I just think that he has all the dimensions that you really want, and I think he's going to come in and do a great job. That's why I think he's going to end up going to Tampa Bay.
What about the Ward kid from Ohio State? Do you
he's
like
right
him?
Next to him. He's pretty close.
He's
I think
right
he's
a
number two corner. He could very well go at number 10.
Yeah, to the Raiders. The Raiders can use a cornerback right there.
Right.
I could see the Raiders possibly getting that done because the Raiders, especially on the defensive side of the ball, the Raiders have some issues. What do you think about what John Gruden is doing over there, Mr. Clayton?
I think it's all as far as the personnel, I think it can be a little bit of an overdue. And here's what I mean by overdue is that you're almost getting too many options and it's going to eat up eventually too much cap room. You know, if like, for example, they, you know, gave a little bit more of a guarantee to Marshawn Lynch. Then they signed Doug Barton. Now they want to draft a running back high. And it's like, okay, there's a lot there. And so I don't know. I think that they've added a little bit of age at some of the positions. That's a little scary. But I think, you know, overall, they're adding players. I think the biggest thing that I like is the fact that they're adding players on defense. Because, I mean, you go back to last year, and their defense was their problem. And what they ended up doing, they ended up coming back and, they added one player in free agency, Jelani Jenkins, at 1 year, $1 million, and they cut him.
Yeah.
So they added nothing to the defense.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, they drafted on defense for their first two picks ended up being hurt.
True. Yeah. And, you know, and their defense has been underperforming as of lately, too, the last couple of years under Jack Del Rio. I don't think their defense was, you know, a lot of people thought their defense would come along with their offense. I don't think it came along at all. Now, how do you look at the Saints at 27? You know, they're going to be – it's very intriguing to me right there. Would you go with the tight end or would you go with a pass rusher? If you
pass rusher.
Your gathers.
Depending, I mean, depending on what pass rusher, because there's a big drop-off after about the top three. So that would be, to me, a big concern. So I would, I think they need a pass rusher.
Yeah, good on.
Because, I mean, they've needed a pass rush for 2 years.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. You see, there's nobody, you know – I know they re-signed Okafor. He played pretty good for him last year until he ruptured his Achilles, and they re-signed him back. And they got Hendricks, the young kid that they drafted out of Central Florida last year. But I still, you know, it's always a premium on big men that can move, you know, especially on the defensive line at the defensive end position. That's why I was still intrigued. Would you go after another? The kid from Ohio State, Hubert, do you like him?
He's okay. I'm not as sold on him. Again, I think once you get past three of the pass rushers, then you got problems. Really?
Yeah. It's pretty much up for grabs. So would you be more secure with taking the tight end out of South Dakota State there?
Possibly, yeah. Because, again, there's only like about two tight ends that really are considered, I think, top two-round picks. I mean, you got maybe one that could slip into the first, but I think that would be one they can consider. So, yeah. So, yeah, but I don't know. Do you like what they've done so far with the Saints this offseason?
You know, I like what they did with the offseason by addressing. Now, I think they really, in my opinion, I think they kind of jumped the gun when they took Kurt Coleman. I liked the guy when he played over there at Carolina. But when you saw Tyrann Mathieu coming loose, Eric Reed, those guys like that, I thought they could have been a little more of an upgrade than Kurt Coleman. You know, maybe they jumped up and thought that they were going to cost more. But I thought they could have went either those that direction. I like the linebacker from the Jets. He had 135 tackles last year. He's very productive. They suffered when those guys got hurt last year. And I like how they brought Jermon Bushrod back on the offensive line.
Right.
Now, this is something else. They could even pick up an offensive guard.
Very well could, yeah. Because they lost, Senio Comente. So he was good here from UW and had done a nice job for them. That was a tough loss.
I miss it.
Because he gave them versatility.
Yes, he did. He played all positions. Mr. Clayton, he played right tackle, left guard, right guard, and center. He played them all, you know. So, and I know they wouldn't be able to pay the money to get him, you know. Now, I like the Cam Merriweather pickup. If everything's okay with him, that'll be a nice addition along with Mike Thomas as far as a wide receiver and Ted Ginn.
Right.
But they need a tight end.
JB, got to run.
Mr. Clayton, enjoy the draft next week, my friend.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Scott in Redmond. Hey, Scott.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
You know, I've got a couple things I want to touch base with. I'm kind of disappointed about the schedule, and I've talked about this, I think, last year with you on the radio.
Yeah.
Basically, we've got 7 home games, 9 away games. We got a home game in London, and I don't think that's right. I think if
that's a Raider game, right? That's a Raider road game.
Yeah, but we're still on the road. We're in London, but they count it as a home game. So basically, we only got 7 home games here, and that's what I wanted to say. Why don't we just have that as an away game? And it's a coin toss because we're both going away, so we get to wear our home uniforms, but we're not at CenturyLink, and that, you know, the other thing, you look at the schedule. We got 3 primetime games in December, which is nice. But if we get stuck in a deep hole because we played so many games on the road to start with, that's going to be hard to catch up with because I don't think anybody's going to catch the Rams.
Right.
I really, not in our
division. I think they look pretty good, yeah.
I mean, everybody's still going to play the game. You got to lace them up. Their quarterback could get hurt, but I think their defense is going to be phenomenal. So with that being said, I'm looking forward to the season, but – you know, starting out the way we have, I mean, we're not as invincible as we used to be the last, you know, going back 4 years when everybody was scared to come here and watch us. And even the TV people just realized, hey, we can go watch primetime Seattle games because it's going to be a good game now. Mm-hmm. We're not going to come out and blow people out. So they actually scheduled us. So,
which is good because, again, it shows that there's some faith that the networks have in this franchise.
Well, and it, that's good.
And that's huge. I mean, because again, it's like where so many people are saying, ah, this team's not going to be there and all that stuff. Well, I mean, you know, they have the four primetime games. That's pretty impressive.
No, no, it's a good thing. Is like you said, I listened to your show yesterday. We were all talking about how the Chicago Bears get a Monday night, second week of the season, you know, right there. I mean, no disrespect to the Bears. Everybody deserves their shot, but it was like kind of a shocker. I got Seahawks second week of the season. Okay. Cool. But, you know, it was just an interesting matchup for a Monday night game that early in the season.
Right. Oh, no question. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, again, I kind of like the schedule. What I don't like is the opening two games on the road. I think and again, it's not because of Seattle. I look at that just, that's something that should not happen. It should be home and away. You shouldn't have to wait till week three to have your first home game.
Yeah, it's not like baseball where you're playing up there and then games are getting snowed out. You
mm-hmm,
know,
mm-hmm.
Football's always been played outside. You know, and the weather doesn't matter. But no, it's good. I'm looking forward to the changes that are going to be happening. I still don't know about how this whole Earl's going to turn out. You know, no one's going to know. And you know, that's one thing I've learned about the Seahawks. They just don't say anything. Maybe there's some deception, you know, like you've talked about it. Oh, we're looking here, we're looking there, we're looking east, we're looking west. You know, I mean, how that's played with all the GMs. We're talking about somebody in the east, you know what I mean?
Right.
We're going west. You know, everybody plays a game of poker, basically.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
they don't show their hands. But, you know, it's kind of, I don't know. Now, the way I'm looking at this now, I don't want to disrespect any Seahawks fans. I'm looking at it from a realistic point. I think we're fighting for the second wild card spot.
Which I think that would be a big bonus. That would be great if that would be the case.
Yeah, because I don't think you're going to win your division.
Right.
So that leaves
Agreed.
Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves Philly winning their division. So those are the three slots. Then you got Green Bay Packers sitting out there. So they might pick up a slot. And then, you know, I don't know. There's always a team that comes, a dark horse that comes out of the blue and has a great team. But Seahawks, I mean, they get in a hole early, it's going to be hard to make it up.
Right. But overall, I think that team's in reasonably good shape. They just now need to fill out the roster with the draft and thereafter and start to see where they are. But you get the feeling that where everybody I think has been down thinking, oh yeah, this is a year where they're totally sacrificing everything. Well, guess what? The networks believe in them because they got the network support and those games, and along with the fact that this team's still viable. It has a quarterback. We'll see how good it can get on defense. Hey Scott, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mark in Renton. Hey, Mark.
Hey, John. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
So I'm doing great. Yeah, I really like the Seahawks schedule. I thought that they got the benefit of having Minnesota and Green Bay at home. And, Pete Carroll is all about how you finish. So I think Pete Carroll would rather have, more home games at the end of the season than at the beginning. So I see nothing but positive for the schedule. And I
right.
wondered if you could tell me who came out with in your opinion, who has some of the easier schedules and which teams have the most difficult schedules?
Yes, that's what I'm going to break down over the weekend to really focus on it. That's one of my big assignments. I always have all these database assignments and everything else. And so I'm going to really hit that over the weekend and really come to some conclusions. But, I mean, I think that, because it's funny because it bounces back every year. And so, obviously the easier schedules are going to be in the AFC. That's where I think that there's a big advantage for the AFC North teams like Pittsburgh and Baltimore and that. I think they get a big benefit because, again, where it's really tough. I mean, think about how tough the NFC is. I mean, when you look at it, okay, so if you're playing the NFC South, you've got four tough quarterbacks to go against. Four. Okay. Then, and again, quarterbacks play so much of it. If you're playing the West, AFC West, it's a little bit, it's easier because I think Kansas City is going to be down a little bit. That Oakland is going to try to bounce back. The South still probably needs another year of development in the AFC. In the AFC North, again, Cincinnati is seeing if they can bounce back. Cleveland's getting better, but they're still not that good. So, the easier schedules go in the AFC because there's just not enough good teams.
Right, yeah. Do you know which division, does the AFC South, like Houston and Indianapolis, do you know which division that they play in the NFC this year? Because I can see teams like Houston and Indianapolis kind of bouncing back.
Well, that's what you saw with Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee was able to take advantage of their schedule last year. You know, obviously, if Indy gets better with Andrew Luck, but again, the talent around him isn't all that good. So, you know, it's just a weekly challenge to see. But I think that, you know, again, the AFC, they have to have a lot of building. Because that's where, I mean, you see, you know, more quarterbacks in this draft are probably going to, you know, Buffalo and Cleveland and the Jets. I mean, they're going to be drafting the quarterbacks because, again, there's such a need there. And you look at the AFC East, I mean, it's such an easy division for New England, you know, because I'm not sold that Buffalo still has things right at the quarterback position. So, yeah. You know, it's the still stands out. The top two teams are Pittsburgh and New England.
Yep. Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, get together with Doug Farrar, Bleacher Report. We'll talk some good football talk coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us right now, Doug Farrar, and getting ready for this draft. I don't know, Doug. I mean, is the draft more exciting than the start of free agency or the start of the season? Where do you kind of rank it?
Well, I think it's changed. I know Ben Vohan of the Boston Globe did a great article, talked to Les Snead, the GM of the Rams, a few days ago. You may have seen this. And Snead talked about he and the Rams did some calculations in which they've figured out that with the current off-season limitations, it takes three times longer to get a player ready for the NFL than it did, say, 10 years ago. So I think, I mean, my excitement for free agency kind of goes up because I think a lot of teams are using free agency as a draft to a point. And I think the NFL is helping that by increasing the salary cap year by year, something I know you know a lot about. I think at this point, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, you built your team through the draft. I think that's changing, and I think the off-season rules have something to do with it. I think the disparity between college and pro schemes for some coaches and executives has something to do with it. But, you know, I think, especially in a draft like this where there aren't a lot of big names, but there's good depth in, say, you know, round two through six, I think it's indicative of how the league overall is changing.
Oh, yeah, I think there's something to that. And that's one of the things I know I'm still trying to sort through. And here's, you know, for example, this is May 3rd is the day that you have to put, if you want, on the first round picks from the 2015 draft, that 5-year, you know, your fifth-year option, right? Well, go back to 2015, right. And there's already about 8, I believe, first-round picks that are no longer with their teams. And think about that. That's going right into, you know, the last year of their contracts and their 4-year contracts. And what I'm seeing, particularly, you know, with the amount of trades, the 26 trades that have been so far, and it goes back to last year, more teams, you know, you go to, going to Les Snead's point, they say if it takes three times longer, by the third time, they're not waiting. They're getting rid of the guy. Whether it's a first-round pick,
second-round pick. Well, you look at what the Seahawks have done. I mean, they've basically taken the entire first round of the 2013 draft under their roster and are trying to figure out if they can take these guys who have been in the league, may not have succeeded for whatever reason. Oh, maybe we can turn them around, and at least they have some NFL experience, even if it isn't impressive. I think more and more teams are going to do that. They're going to start picking off guys whose options aren't – the fifth-year options aren't picked up, or they get cut for some reason. They're out of the league for a while. Deion Jordan's a good example. You know, I think it becomes maybe more like baseball where, you know, the draft is obviously important, but free agency is really what gets your team together.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and again, there is something different in the wins. There's no question about it because, again, you're seeing it almost every day with all the moves that are being made. Before we get into the draft here, how do you sum up the Seahawks offseason as far as their acquisitions?
I mean, it's, you know, they can parse words as far as retooling or rebuilding. It's clear they're blowing this thing down to the studs, and I think it's a 2 to 3 year plan. And it's going to be interesting to see how they build it without Scott McLuhan, who was very much a part of this the first time around. You know, Carolyn Schneider, obviously very adept with personnel and fitting personnel to scheme.
You know, we'll see if they can, because if they can pull off what they built to win one Super Bowl and almost win a Super Bowl, if they can build that again over the next 2, 3, 4 years, that has to go down as one of the more impressive front office accomplishments. You know, obviously the Belichick consistency since 2000 is, I think, unmatched, especially because Belichick has to deal with free agency, where Bill Walsh and Paul Brown and Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry didn't. But if Seattle's able to do this and build the team back up to serious contention in a couple of years, which I think is what it's going to take, that's going to be a very impressive achievement, because you don't see it a lot. You see teams in this era, and I know you know this, they'll get a good bump for about 3, 4, 5 years, and then things start to recede, and then other teams come up. So I think it's clear that it's a total rebuild, which is smart, might be a year too late, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, the one thing I look at with the rebuild or whatever you say is that, you bring up the run, and I look at the Rams, and they're putting together what's going to be a pretty good run, but I see it not lasting all that long. And the reason I say that is, you know, as you watch with Seattle, one of the things that they did, as some other teams have done, have been the model of taking a young quarterback, not being paid, and then trying to load up as much as they can around him. Because now once the quarterback starts eating up 13 to 15% of the cap, then you have some limitations on what you're able to do. And so once Jared Goff gets to that, not the probably year six, so that then things, and they give him a contract, that's going to eat up a good portion of their cap and make things tough.
Sure, and it's in, you know, the Jaguars gave Bortles that 3-year deal, which they can kind of wriggle out of in the second year. And you wonder, okay, are they hoping he can become what they want him to be? Do they draft a Lamar Jackson at 29 and see what that might bring in 2019 and beyond? And might you see teams start to draft a quarterback a year early, drop the expensive quarterback like he's hot right when that cap thing becomes a problem? I could see more Moneyball leaning teams say, okay, our franchise quarterback is our franchise quarterback until he wants the Joe Flacco deal, and at that point we've got another guy waiting in the wings. Mm-hmm. I could see teams starting to do that, because it does, I mean, it completely redefined what Seattle is able to do. Tom Brady takes cuts, and I think he's doing okay, but he's
not bad.
Sort of allow the Patriots to do things they would not otherwise be able to do. We'll see what happens with, you know, Aaron Rodgers' contract, which he might be a $200 million guy. But, yeah, it's unquestionably the Rams have that luxury right now. You know, the Buccaneers and Titans have done the 5th years on Winston and Mariota. But yeah, that the Rams are doing it the right way. You've got this window, you get as much talent as you can, you try and win one or two Super Bowls, which I think they have the talent to do at this point. And, you know, that's your bump. That's your era.
No doubt. So now, how do you sort out the way the quarterbacks are going to go? My thinking is Sam Darnold goes 1 to Cleveland. Then number 3 is Baker Mayfield to the Jets. Just because he's the only quarterback left that I think John Elway would take, I think he takes Josh Allen, and then Buffalo trades up to 6 or somewhere, and they take Josh Rosen.
I have it Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, and I wouldn't give Josh Allen a first round grade, but you know, in the mocks in your head, you can do what you would do, or you can do what you think John Elway would do. I mean, Elway drafted Osweiler in the 2nd round. He drafted Paxton Lynch in the 1st. He is fine with big guys with big arms who can't read defenses, and that's exactly what Josh Allen is. I'm higher on Rosen. I mean, I know the injury history. I think the stuff about speaking his mind is absolute garbage, and if there are teams that can't handle a quarterback who speaks his mind, maybe they should get new personnel staffs. I think Rosen is the most pro-ready quarterback in this draft class, and I don't think it's particularly close. With Darnold, I think above the waist, he's great. He processes things well. He's got a super arm. He understands how to throw into tight windows. I think, and putting him with Hugh Jackson, who kind of needs to reclaim his quarterback whisperer reputation at this point after the Deshaun Kizer thing, you know, Darnold's got a lot of footwork stuff to do. He's got a lot of lower body mechanics. what I say with quarterbacks at times is his upper body and his lower body seem to be arguing, and I don't see Darnold as a mechanically efficient passer. I think once he gets the hang of that, he could be Phillip Rivers. But I think Rosen is the guy who's got the most on the ball mechanically, as far as accuracy, as far as seeing the entire field. Mayfield, you know, he's going to be interesting because he's got to go to a scheme where he, and this is true of Drew Brees, Michael Vick, Russell Wilson, obviously, he's going to have to roll right, and he's going to have to find throwing lanes through mobility. He's 6'1 max. So he's got the same problem that all those other guys did. How do I see above the line, above the defenders? And I think it's, you know, I think he can run a West Coast offense over time, had a lot of easy throws at Oklahoma, but can also make tight window throws. You know, and I think the guy, I find it funny that nobody's talking about Lamar Jackson. When we talk like the big four quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson has had games where he, in 2017, was the best quarterback in this class. Problem with him is kind of the problem with Darnold. Upper and lower body, he's an upper body thrower. And he's got the thing that Michael Vick used to have where he could, with a flick of the wrist, the ball goes 40 yards on a line right into the receiver's hands. He's got the thing. I mean, he reminds me of Tyrod Taylor a bit. Tyrod always had a great deep arm. It's the short to intermediate stuff. But I look at a team like Jacksonville, and I think, my gosh, with that run-heavy scheme, they got Norwell the guard in free agency. You've got Fournette. You've got a very multiple run game. I mean, they were killing the Patriots in the first half of the AFC Championship with those RPOs, and then they stopped for God knows what reason. You put Lamar Jackson into that system, and that's just ridiculous. So, I think Mayfield and Jackson right now are probably the most scheme-dependent guys. I don't think any of them are an Andrew Luck or a RG3. I think Rosen's the closest. I think all these guys are developmental, and it makes it interesting if, say, what if the Patriots, you know, trade up and try to get a guy? And I think that's entirely possible. It's a fascinating quarterback class in that none of these guys are without dings. None of them are perfect, and they will all have to be developed to a greater or lesser degree.
And that's what I really find interesting about this draft is that you're right. It's one that, it gets a lot of interest. It's high risk. Unfortunately, some of the teams like Cleveland and Denver and that, if they do take the quarterbacks, they don't have to play them because at least they got interim type quarterbacks. Maybe they're not good, maybe not great, but again, they don't have to rush them. I don't know. When you look back at Mitch Trubisky, and I think that you probably like him more than I do. I think they rushed him. I don't think they've helped him one bit.
Well, I think that whole situation with Trubisky, I mean, they signed Mike Glennon, which may be the dumbest contract of the last 10 years. Glennon goes out and proves to be what he is, which is an abysmal quarterback. And they have to rush Trubisky because their entire offense is falling apart. Now, Dial Loggins, the former offensive coordinator, did a really good job in the preseason of mixing pro concepts with what Trubisky had done in his 1 year as a starter in college, which was roll out, you know, simple boot action stuff, make the routes easy. And then they got into the regular season and they put Tariq Cohen in the witness protection program. They made things very hard for Trubisky. And I think with Matt Nagy, you're going to see, because Nagy was as much or more than Andy Reid, the designer of all that backfield action and motion and the things in Kansas City that made Alex Smith, believe it or not, the most prolific deep passer in 2017. So I think, you know, Nagy's already said the right things. They're going to get Cohen involved. They're going to tailor the offense to what Trubisky can do. I don't think they did that at all last year. So for me, the jury is entirely out on Trubisky, whether they rushed him or not. I don't think the offense was built for him at all. I think outside of Buffalo and what they did with Tyrod Taylor, there wasn't a worse marriage of quarterback and scheme last year than what happened in Chicago. So, I mean, as a evaluator, what I do with Trubisky is wipe the slate clean and say, okay, what's Nagy going to do? You kind of got to start over in your perception of this guy because the offense is going to be entirely different.
No doubt. Okay, so I would assume that you were all anticipating the Seahawks trading down from 18. But at 18, what players would you think would intrigue them to consider staying?
You know, and with Mike Solari, as the line coach, I think he's going to actually want guys who, you know, have technique, and it's going to be different than it was under Cable.
Right.
If Isaiah Wynn, the guard from Georgia, falls to 18, which I don't think he will, they should be falling all over themselves to get to the podium to take that one. I would say if Wynn's still there at maybe 15 or 16, if I were Snyder, and I know he won't because he wants to hoard those mid-round picks, Quentin Nelson is the best guard I've ever seen come out of college. He leapfrogged Steve Hutchinson and David DeCastro for me. He's the best player in this draft. He's going to go top five, and he deserves to. I think Wynn, who has also played left tackle at Georgia, did that last year, maybe has the best movement skills of any guard, very strong, doesn't have, I mean, Quentin Nelson just has this malevolence about his play. But I think Isaiah Wynn would be tremendous. You hear a lot about Will Hernandez from UTEP. You know, big mauling guy. I think Solari is going to want more of a movement guard because he's kind of a power counter trap guy. As far as the tackles, you know, McGlinchey from Notre Dame is okay. I don't, you know, none of the tackles really blow me away. It's kind of a weak tackle class. They could probably get a guy in the, you know, second or third rounds. I'll tell you one guy to watch for who I think would fit really, really well in this scheme is Braden Smith from Auburn, projected as a second to third round guy, 6'6", 315, really good movement skills. I think he loses power at times. You remember Eric Steinbach,
right?
When he played with the Bengals, and he was more of a move guy. Could run 20 yards upfield and block for a screen. He reminds me a little bit of Steinbach. I think that would be a guy to watch for. Right now I'm putting together a mock for Monday for Bleacher Report, and depending on the medical, I think Maurice Hurst from Michigan, for example, would be an absolutely dynamite fit for that because Pete Carroll wants interior linemen who can penetrate all the time. Malik McDowell, obviously bust. They lose Sheldon Richardson after the half-year rental. Maurice Hurst, I mean, I'm not going to say he is Warren Sapp, but he reminds me of that. He can just get under two guys' pads and blow them away. I think he would be the run-stopping and penetrating defensive tackle that this team really desperately needs and pretty much doesn't have right now.
No doubt. What about pass rushing ends?
You know, it's an interesting class for that. I know Bradley Chubb is kind of the guy everyone talks about, and he's got 2 10-sack seasons. To me, I would go for Marcus Davenport from Texas San Antonio as an upside guy over Chubb. I think Chubb is more, I don't want to say low ceiling, but you kind of know what you get with him. And I think as a pure pass rusher, he tends to disappear at times. That's just my opinion. I know other people feel very differently. Harold Landry from Boston College, I think, would be an ideal pass rusher. Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech, he's not even 20. He's the youngest player in a draft class since Amobi Okoye. Can play kind of the KJ. As an inside linebacker, he reminds me of KJ Wright. Virginia Tech didn't use him as a pass rusher a lot, as an outside guy. But 6'4", 253, ungodly movement skills. This guy just has all the physical characteristics you could ever want. I think Edmonds has untapped and possibly scary potential as an edge rusher. You know, I don't know if anyone will do it. Also, and I mean, he's not a linebacker per se, and I don't know what the buzz is around putting Shaquem Griffin and Shaquille Griffin on the same team. But Shaquem Griffin from Central Florida, obviously the story of the combine, potentially a second to fourth round guy, plays kind of the Cam Chancellor role, but was an unbelievable blitzer off the edge. So they, you know, they get Shaquem Griffin, they're going to get quarterback pressure in some pretty unconventional but potentially effective ways.
Okay, so what do we have on Bleacher Report?
I got the mock draft coming out Monday. Got a whole bunch of, you know, Thursday, Friday draft reflections, and just trying to keep up with it all.
Okay, that's a good thing. Are you going to be over at the Seahawks during the draft?
Might be there Friday. I think if I show up Thursday, it'll just be Pete and John explaining where they traded out of the first round.
Exactly, yeah. So
I think we all kind of book the dinner for Friday at this point, don't we?
Pretty much, yeah. So I'll be hoping to see you there. Hey, Doug Farrar, thank you for joining us. Read him on the Bleacher Report. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Kelly in Tacoma. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, John. The Falcons and Deion Jones gave us the blueprint on how to handle the Rams. They shut down Todd Gurley in the playoffs. And the 18th pick, the Seahawks, can get Leighton Vander Esch from Boise State, the best cover linebacker in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
KJ Wright only has one more year, and he is a good cover linebacker. He is not a great cover linebacker. I believe Leighton Vander Esch can be a great cover linebacker that can also add depth and youth to our linebacker group.
Yeah, but here's my concern is that, boy, he's not going to be the first linebacker taken, but I know the teams like Oakland and Buffalo, if they stay at 12, which of course is a big if because they want to trade up and get a quarterback, those are teams that I think could take him. So it's possible. I mean, he's going to go, I think, between 10 and 15.
Yeah, his stock has definitely been climbing.
Oh, no question. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt.
I mean, we have David Johnson and Todd Gurley in our league. We don't have any premier wide receivers. We need to shut down these running backs to have a chance because their defense is going to shut us down, mm-hmm. but we need to shut down their offense. And then the only other thing I have to say is we should take Luke Falk with our first pick in the fourth round.
Well, I think he's going to go into second or third, to be honest. I think that New England's going to be in on him if they don't do anything in the first round. They could take him maybe with one of their second-round picks. But I don't think he's going to fall to four. I really don't. I mean, arguably, he's the seventh or eighth quarterback in this draft. And when you see that four are going to go in the top 10 and that Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph are going to be the next two to go, I mean, Falk's going to be among those next guys.
Would you trade down or take Leighton Vander Esch if you had the chance?
I would trade down. I just think they have so many more needs. And, again, it's like I look at the thing that happened last year, and obviously the Malik McDowell thing turned into a disaster. But, did it really? Because, again, that was the guy that they wanted, and they were able to get four other players with their trade downs that kind of said, okay, well, if it doesn't work out. And I think in this case, I mean, 18 is such a good spot for the draft, but they have so many other needs, and I think that, more than likely, they've just got to try to, get good players, and, because some are going to work and some aren't going to work. But that's why I think they need to trade down.
If they trade Earl Thomas, still trade your first-round pick?
That takes away if you get a second-round pick and more for Earl Thomas, now you have the flexibility, I think, because now you can move around even in the second round to be able to do something. So, Earl Thomas allows you, I think, more of a chance if you see a good player at 18 to take a good player at 18.
Love your show, John.
Hey, Kelly, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Scott in Kent. Hey, Scott.
Hey, John. How you doing, Professor?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Let's say you could have whatever you wanted. You're with the Seahawks. You're in the war room on draft day with John Snyder and Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
You got the top three picks in the draft. You get anybody you want. Who do you go for, in what order, and why?
If you were in the top three, Bradley Chubb, because I think they need the defensive end more so than anything else. And I think that he can come in and make an immediate impact. I mean, if they were up there, I think that because, again, when you lose two defensive ends like Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, because both not back, now you're Deion Jordan right now is a starter, a projected starter, or you feel good enough about that. I mean, he didn't play enough to know can he play through a whole season. That's where I think that if you're up top, I mean, what would you look at? Whoops, did we lose Scott? Oh, yeah, Scott, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, so if you're now in that same position, which one would you do?
I don't know. To me, you're the professor and I'm the student. I wonder, but if you could pick, let's say beside that, let's say you had two more picks
yeah.
in the top five, who would you go with?
Oh, I mean, in the top five, then Barkley, obviously, the running back, and then also Nelson, the offensive lineman. Because, again, it's just like as Doug Farrar said, and I think everybody else said, he's the best guard to come into the league in ages. I mean, you've never seen – I mean, it's so rare to see one that you can automatically project to be a Pro Bowler, and he seems to be that one. So I think that, and the position players – I mean, Barkley, Chubb, and again, I still would put Chubb over Barkley just, I think, for needs because, again, I think this team wants to establish itself on defense. But, again, Barkley would be certainly intriguing because they need a running back, and he's the best running back to hit the draft in many, many years. Hey, Scott, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.